From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up at Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Two pharmaceutical collaborations have announced 1 week apart that their preliminary studies on a COVID-19 vaccine have yielded promising results of more than 90% effectiveness. Rather than publish their results in peer-reviewed scientific journals, Pfizer and its partner BioNTech, and more recently Moderna, announced the tantalizing results via press releases. Both saw their stocks respond in kind, and after each announcement, President Donald Trump took pains to take credit. But how excited should Americans get about a vaccine and a potential return to normalcy? My guest is Peter Maybarduke, Public Citizen's Global Access to Medicines Director. Welcome to the program, Peter.
It's good to be with you.
So the last time you and I spoke was in April, when Public Citizen put out a statement that outlined a set of principles around how a vaccine should be developed and how it should be distributed and how cooperation really should be at the basis of any kind of development of vaccine. We've seen instead a sort of arms race with billions of tax dollars being thrown at numerous companies. However, the very first company to announce results was one that didn't take U.S. tax dollars for this specific vaccine, I understand, and that's Pfizer and its partner BioNTech. Is that correct?
Well, it's correct, except that Pfizer and BioNTech have benefited from public investments, as have all the major vaccine manufacturers. Pfizer, like several other leading manufacturers, including Moderna, relied on a stabilized spike protein that was developed by federal scientists. And BioNTech, which contributed some of the innovation to this vaccine, benefited from $445 million in grants from the German government. So the public all around the world is fueling the development of vaccine platform technologies and funding the manufacturing of these vaccines. And that is one more reason among many that the public and governments should exercise considerable rights to ensure these vaccines are affordably priced to governments, available to everyone, and manufactured at scale.
There are some very troubling sort of side effects, but maybe these are intentional, of these announcements on the stock prices of these companies. For example, when Pfizer and BioNTech a week ago announced their results, of course, stocks of Pfizer especially spiked. And within, we heard that the Pfizer chief executive sold his share of stocks on the day that the announcement was made. And of course, a week after, when Moderna made its announcement, Pfizer's stock prices dropped. So Pfizer's chief managed to sell his stocks when they were at peak value. Now, Moderna's stock has increased. And of course, Moderna has this added concern around ethics, because its executive, Moncef Slaoui, has a position within the federal government. So do you think that the public should be worried about these companies prioritizing money-making above all else?
Well, certainly, as a general matter, it's inappropriate to do science by press release. It's far more appropriate to wait for completion of the proper trial data and work with the authorities. So Pfizer's initial announcement, we think, was inappropriate in that regard. The results are promising, to be clear, for both vaccines, and Moderna's relies on a larger results from a larger number of individuals. And so that is encouraging. But we have, of course, invested as taxpayers a tremendous amount of money in these vaccines, and we're facing a terrible global medical crisis that necessitates the exercise of conditions being attached to those grants. When we give these hundreds of millions of dollars, these billions of dollars, public, our government, should be attaching conditions that say we're going to ensure affordability, we're going to ensure supply, we're going to ensure the disclosure of know-how, trade secrets, and license of technology worldwide to prevent a global vaccine apartheid, so that everyone everywhere gets access and we're not rationing out a very limited supply to the rich.
Already, President Trump made it clear that he wanted to politicize the vaccine. When he gave his speech last week on vaccines, this was the first time he had, you know, given public remarks since the election. And he announced that the vaccine would be distributed everywhere except maybe New York, because he said that Governor Andrew Cuomo has expressed hesitation around a very, you know, quickly developed vaccine. And now Cuomo's threatening to sue the federal government. What do you make of this? I mean, it's just so shocking to see a president single out a state to not have distribution of this vaccine.
Certainly, it is shocking. And fortunately, there are regulators and scientists in place to help ensure that the distribution of a vaccine is not so thoroughly politicized. The White House made a complete mess of its first test with the misallocation of remdesivir some months back, the first experimental treatment for COVID-19. And we will see, of course, if the government has learned its lesson, but there are a number of good faith people in serious positions in the U.S. government who are working on improving vaccine rollout. What that doesn't tell us, of course, is what will be the fate of billions of people around the world who will not necessarily have such timely access. The doses that have been allocated have largely been allocated to wealthy countries, and plans to reach others around the world are quite limited. So it could be several years before everyone worldwide receives a safe and effective vaccine, unless we intervene, unless we do something to our politics to change that.
And has the Trump administration, because it had this distribution deal with Pfizer and BioNTech, did it sort of snap up a big chunk of its expected vaccines?
The Trump administration has purchased, has advanced purchased millions of doses from several vaccine candidates. Moderna, for example, 100 million doses, which would serve 50 million people, with options to purchase tens, potentially hundreds of millions more.
That number is explained by the fact that people need two doses for it to be effective.
People need two doses for these vaccines, yes. So those agreements are in place. And our concern is about what further conditions have been attached or not attached to those agreements, and the fact that we are not easily able to review those agreements. Many are secret. They are slowly being disclosed in a piecemeal fashion rather than giving public health experts access to the terms and conditions to see what has been negotiated and whether the government is doing everything it can to help end this pandemic more quickly.
Now, are you concerned about the distribution of this vaccine? First, because the Trump administration has politicized everything to do with the vaccine and in government, the Health and Human Services Department run by Alex Azar would be the one overseeing distribution, and it has been thoroughly politicized, but also just from a practical stand, because these two latest announcements on vaccines both use a system that requires the vaccine to be stored at extremely low temperatures that would necessitate the building of a whole new infrastructure nationwide to even store these vaccines, right?
I think there will be significant challenges, those that we foresee and those that are difficult to foresee. But I am optimistic that our political climate is not going to ruin it. I think there is a very serious infrastructure and discussion in place to make sure that the distribution is handled in a rational fashion. As I say, what I'm far less convinced of is when people globally will get access to this vaccine. I think some of the most vulnerable communities in the world, potentially billions of people, will be waiting for years unless we make a point of transferring the technology and teaching the world to make vaccines. The alternative is a global vaccine apartheid that we will regret for a generation to come.
Then that's a big part of that has to do also, I mean, even if you sort of look at it from a nationalist perspective, it's unless you close the borders of the U.S. does not remain safe if people outside the country don't have access to a vaccine, right?
Right. No one is safe until everyone is safe. The pandemic can continue to course. We are in this together in a very real, visceral sort of way.
So given that these vaccines are being developed with tax dollars from people, from the people of these governments, the only reason to keep the information, the technology, proprietary, is to make money for these companies, right? There's no other reason to keep it secret.
I think that's correct. I suppose you could make a try and make a security argument, but in that case, the technology should be stewarded by the government rather than by the corporations. The reason that the technologies are held secret is because companies want to make subsequent products using some of the same technologies. But we are in a global pandemic. The public has not only funded the development of these technologies, but in many cases pioneered it. Federal scientists hold the patents and patent applications for some key aspects of the technologies. DOD and the National Institutes of Health have been funding development, research and development in coronaviruses for a decade. And so it's very important that these be shared with the world so that we can take advantage of the world's manufacturing capacity. Right now, we're operating in a siloed way that does not take full advantage of what the world could do to provide an adequate supply of safe and effective vaccines for all. And that's because of deference to the profit-making imperative of some of these corporations.
On Monday, President Trump had two tweets on the vaccine. One said, stock market getting very close to 30,000 on new vaccine news, 95% effective. He said, another vaccine just announced, this time by Moderna, 95% effective. For those great historians, please remember that these great discoveries, which will end the China plague, all took place on my watch. How much damage has Trump done in his nationalist approach to this virus? You know, he's repeatedly called it the China virus, the China plague.
That's quite terrible. I mean, the World Health Organization is a flawed institution, but we need it right now to broker exactly the sort of accords that can get us through the pandemic. And by pulling out of WHO, Trump did tremendous damage. The administration also did damage with all its various signals that it would hoard vaccines, not joining an initiative called COVAX, which is a plan for more equitable allocation of the vaccine worldwide, by signaling that it would try and buy CureVac, a German vaccine manufacturer. The Trump administration significantly heightened tensions around the world and fed this sense that countries have to fend for themselves rather than cooperate. And that is a tremendous missed opportunity.
Now, because of the economic impact of the pandemic, the pressure to get back to normal is incredibly high. And the pressure to have a vaccine that works, that's approved, that's distributed is extremely high. But of course, a vaccine needs to be safe. Are you confident that the sped up timeline for developing such vaccines, to my knowledge, there's never been a vaccine that's developed in such a fast timeline to a disease like this. Are you concerned about the timeline and that economic concerns might be pushing the development of and the speeding up of this vaccine before it's known that it's fully safe, either to the American public or to the global public? I mean, there can be poor side effects of poorly studied vaccines.
It is imperative that our regulatory agencies and independent researchers are able to review the safety and efficacy data of these vaccines. We certainly cannot at this point comment as to the ultimate safety and efficacy of the vaccines. I think we can say that there are promising interim results, but we should have full review of the phase 3 clinical trial data. Public Citizen does not support the use of the emergency use authorization truncated process to approve these vaccines for
the
reasons.
This is the FDA approval process? Yeah.
The FDA approval process. Nevertheless, we think it's likely that an emergency procedure will be used to hasten the vaccines to market. And in that case, it's just important that we can review as much safety and efficacy data as possible. We are not there yet. And we get this one shot to do it right, right? It's sort of very important that the world is given confidence in a vaccine and that rational use sort of all around the globe. So let's do it right. Let's get the tests in. Let's review the data. And let's scale up manufacturing meanwhile and get it to as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, once we know it's safe and effective. The U.S. government, by the way, has the power to do that. There are powers that are sort of being neglected here to increase manufacturing capacity, to share technology. It's critically important that we get that done.
And that's a really important issue. We know that the U.S. government failed badly in the testing around COVID when the disease first emerged earlier this year. The Trump administration and any federal government, whether it's Biden or Trump, would have access to the Defense Production Act. Could they not use that act to ramp up any infrastructure needed for rapid development and distribution of a vaccine?
Absolutely. The Defense Production Act, also the All Hazards Pandemic Preparedness Act, also 28 U.S.C. 1498 on the government use of patents, the Bayh-Dole Act. There are a variety of existing levers under existing law that the government can use to clear technological barriers, bring stakeholders together, make it our moonshot, right? Say research institutions, universities, corporations, everybody into the pool, everybody working together to solve the manufacturing challenges as quickly as possible for as many people as possible. Instead, we've allowed each company to chart its own course on the public dime, including running clinical trials and measuring clinical trials individually rather than in a unified protocol, a master protocol where we can compare all the vaccine safety and efficacy data against each other. Companies didn't want that, so they resisted it. So there are tools at our disposal that we have yet to make use of. But under the Defense Production Act, the government can, for example, activate its existing manufacturing capacity. The government actually manages several industrial facilities jointly with private industry. It can install equipment in private facilities. It can develop public manufacturing to try and increase the scale. And we've not really taken advantage of those tools to date.
What you are just outlining sounds like it should be part of the immediate agenda of the incoming Biden-Harris administration. And in fact, one of the very first things that President-elect Biden did when it was clear he had won the election was to form a coronavirus task force. Some of the members we already know, Dr. Rick Bright, who's a whistleblower, who was essentially fired by the Trump administration as part of it, as is a former Surgeon General under Obama, and Dr. Michael Osterholm. From seeing those people that are on this coronavirus task force, are you hopeful that the Biden administration will use all the levers at its disposal, all the levers of government, to ensure that the vaccine development is not, you know, just benefiting pharmaceutical companies and that it's that we'll have more cooperation in the interest of the public?
I'm confident that there will be competency at high levels, that there will be very good and experienced people and scientists running much of the nation's response. I am relatively confident that the Biden administration will reengage the world in a very helpful way. But I think there is a further question, that is whether we go this extra mile to actually share technology with the world and help the rest of the world through the pandemic. I actually think that's a different step, and I think it requires some vision about how to restore U.S. global leadership and say, we are going to bring everyone together. We are going to solve this challenge. This is what U.S. leadership is meant for, is to solve the great challenges that face humanity. And I think that's an additional step, and we will certainly be working to help the U.S. government take it.
And in fact, among his first acts as president-elect in preparing for his transition, Biden did have numerous phone conversations with foreign leaders around the world. And they did apparently discuss the vaccine and the virus in general. One of the things that one of the people that Trump, that Biden spoke to was South Korean leader, the South Korean president Moon Jae-in, and South Korea has, you know, had more success in bringing the virus to spread under control. It would be interesting to see whether there are conversation involved sharing information around a vaccine as well. Aren't there other countries, Peter, that have their own vaccine development and their own companies and even governments that are pursuing the development of a vaccine against COVID-19? China has already begun distributing a vaccine in some parts of their country.
Certainly China, Russia, closer U.S. allies like Germany and Great Britain are quite active in this as well. Many countries are also working together in various auspices. The initiative that we would really like to see take root is the technology access pool at the World Health Organization. It's a place where all countries, it was proposed first by Costa Rica, it's a place where all countries can come together to share their manufacturing information and their know-how.
And Biden another. Has said he would rejoin the World Health Organization.
Rejoin the World Health Organization. We're hopeful he'll join a separate initiative called COVAX that's about sharing the limited supply of vaccines. But what we really want beyond that is, you know, while only you or me can take a single dose of a vaccine and then it's exhausted, all the world can benefit from the science and know-how underneath. We can teach the world to make vaccines so that it's not just about rationing better, it's about rationing less. Let's mitigate the supply shortage. Let's put all our resources together to increase manufacturing capacity, to share what we know, to share the technology, and get humanity through the pandemic more quickly. It doesn't cost us anything significant except, you know, the energy to get it done, the will to get it done.
And the profits of Big Pharma.
And some profits of Big Pharma. But, you know, it's a global, I mean, it's a pandemic. The market for these companies is the entire world. And they have benefited from early stage investments from NIH and DOD and others. They've benefited from late stage investments from BARDA and Operation Warp Speed.
This is the least others. That they could do is sacrifice some profits to the global humanity.
The investments are very well covered. The incentives are very well covered. We're not going to wreck any business models here. It's a very basic ask that we put this technology in the pool to benefit humanity when we need it most. That's what the company should be there for.
Well, Peter, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Is citizen.org the best place to find out more information about the work you do?
That'll do.
Thank you so much again, Peter.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
My guest has been Peter Maybarduke, Public Citizen's Global Access to Medicines Director. We've been discussing the two vaccine studies by Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.